Welcome in to another episode of We're Talking. Today we're talking football, Sun Belt Conference football with Danny Reed. I think we're going to get into some basketball too. But for right now, we're going to talk football in this first segment. How are you tonight, Danny?
Buddy, I'm doing great. I hope you're doing okay too.
I am. You know, it's starting to get a little colder here. And when I say colder, it was a high of about 61, which is okay if I get to right there. But any colder than that, below 60, I'm a miserable son of a bitch. So,
that's okay.
Yeah, that's why I'm not going to the bowl game. No.
Well, that's your fault for not going to Orlando this year or something warm. Instead, you're going to Shreveport.
You don't know how much I was praying to go to Frisco, to go to Orlando, to go to anywhere. But any other year, I'd love the Independence Bowl. But this year,
Frisco is sneaky because you think that's going to be nice and warm there. You could just as easily get an upper 30s, low 40s game there. And you know that because you went to Round Rock last year.
Exactly. I do know that. But the thing is, the 23rd is the only day that I can't make a bowl game out of all the bowl games the Sun Belt are in.
We got seven teams this year, though. That's a big deal.
It is. And this is almost for what we're going to be talking about when we get to those bowl games. It's almost like the regular season because we're doing seven games or non-conference schedule because we're doing seven games instead of the usual six. No, we do seven. I don't know.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good point.
So – but no, it's, you know, well, let's talk about the bowl game. No, I'm sorry. The championship game first, because I'm sure you were able to spend some time watching that a little bit. And, for me, as a Cajun fan that did not get to watch the championship game a couple of years ago, because COVID Carolina decided they didn't want to play. No, I'm not bitter. I thoroughly enjoyed the game, but let's not talk about how I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, I bet you did enjoy the game.
I was taking screenshots. I was texting friends. I was just going nuts. I'm going, I love this game. So, but you know, honestly and truly, I really felt the best team in the league this year was Troy. And
yes.
And they showed it. So your thoughts on the game.
They've got the number eight defense in the country. Carlton Marshall was defensive player of the year, and rightfully so. And I remember telling you a couple of weeks ago that I thought that I felt that Troy was going to win that game pretty convincingly. I didn't know that they were going to get up as big as they did that early. And that was with Grayson McCall being at least good enough to try. They really didn't score until late, and at that point the game was already out of hand. But I remember telling you that I thought it was going to be Troy's coronation because it just felt like it was going to be their day, and it seemed that from the very get that it was Troy's day. And to think that they are a crazy Hail Mary away from maybe being on an 11-game winning streak. And the team that they lost to, Ole Miss, turned out to be okay too. But now they've won 10 in a row. And I think that this is the only bowl game that matches up conference champions with Troy in the Sun Belt and UTSA and Conference USA before they go to the American next year. And to start bowl season, to have two top 25 teams, I think this is a pretty good way to christen the schedule.
I agree. I'm loving it. I love the matchup. You know, we played UTSA a couple of years ago in the First Responders Bowl. I like what they're doing there at UTSA. It surprised me that it was them, I guess, that is getting in that top 25 and not a Texas State. So just a lot more history on the football side with Texas State playing better, I thought. But, oh, my goodness. Are you trying to freak me out now?
No, that's just the avatar. We're in the light now. We're good.
Okay. I mean, that avatar, that cats are just not my friends. Not my friends at all.
So. Well, from an Eagle fan, yeah, we don't like cats either. And you can probably figure that one out pretty quick.
Yeah, we won't go there. And for a Cajun fan, we're not a friends of cats either.
No, I don't imagine that you are.
Oh, my goodness. This is fun, Danny. I'm sorry. We're going to go to our first commercial break now, and I'm going to get another drink. No. No, but seriously, the game, though, Troy jumped out. 35-0, was it? I'm reading on some of the message boards and on Twitter, of course, the Coastal fans are saying, well, you know, they really didn't care about the game because, you know, their coach is leaving, blah, blah, blah. And I'm going like, all right, please shut up. Stop making excuses. You got your ass handed to you.
Well, to me, that sounds like their opinion on the conference championship game 2 years ago, too.
Exactly. They want to have it their way. And unfortunately, they're not going to have it their way all the time.
Look. It worked out the way it probably should have because Troy has been the best team in the league, the most consistent team in the league, and they played like it. They had the home field advantage. It looked like they traveled. Coastal traveled well enough, but Troy is a situation where that's a small town, and the average attendance at Veterans Memorial Stadium is bigger than the size of Troy. So that tells you what you're walking into normally. You add the fact that it's a conference championship game, it would have taken Coastal turning into maybe somebody in the NFL, maybe the Philadelphia Eagles, to try to beat that. I just don't know who's going to beat Troy on that day there. That was going to be really, really difficult.
From what I saw with the shots around the stadium and all that, it looks like Troy did an excellent job, and the Sun Belt did an excellent job of marketing the game and doing those things. It was fun to watch.
The most damage took place to one of the goalposts. So now they got to figure that out, but they got a whole offseason to get that prepared.
They can do it. All that money they're going to bring in from the bowl game. So, all right, well, let's move on. Let's talk about bowl games. First game's up tomorrow morning, 10:30 a.m. Miami, that's not us. Oh, I thought I had us up. But there is a bowl game tomorrow at 2 p.m. Against that matchup, UTSA and Troy. How do you see that? I mean, I don't know how much you know about UTSA, but they've been a very consistent team over the last couple of years.
I think this is the second straight year they've won the conference, and this year
there's probably two one of the best that really stick out.
Sorry, a video started playing on the. I'm trying to figure out. I hate that with ESPN with their automatic play on their video, and I can't figure out how to turn it off.
I mean, we've already talked about Troy and the great defense, but UTSA scored almost 40 points a game this year. So, to me, that's the easy matchup. How is Troy's defense going to stop that offense? And when you've got this kind of matchup to start bowl season, I know there's a ton of games, but when you're the first one, you know that you're truly on a national stage and you are not being interrupted by anything else. This is a chance for – I think this represents more of a chance for the Sun Belt because for UTSA, they're not doing this for Conference USA because they're going to the American next year. They're doing this for UTSA. Troy is doing this for Troy, and they're doing this for the Sun Belt. And we know the Sun Belt has the best bowl winning percentage in the college football playoff era. So to me, it feels like it would mean more to Troy to do this than UTSA. And that's just at face value. That's just the way that I see it.
I agree with you there, and I think even though they're not in the American, I think this would be a very good win for the Sun Belt Conference, either any way you look at it. And we've been talking about it all year long, especially early on in the season with some of the matchups between the Sun Belt Conference USA, the MAC, the American. These are games that if the Sun Belt wants to continue to excel – that they need to, I know it's bowl season, but I hate to say must win game, but it's pretty close.
No, we talk a bunch about how you need to win your Power Five games, and that's true, but those are going to be tough to pick off. I mean, two of the last 3 years, we've had a weekend where three teams have beaten Power Five teams, which is great, but we also know that there's going to be a balance of FCS teams, which is unfortunate, but it's the facts. You've got to schedule them. You've got to fill out 12. When you figure a way to beat AAC teams, and to me, it's independent of whether it's home or road, because the AAC views themselves as that next league that's on the cusp of being a power league. Now, with the new structure that's going to be in place with the 12-team college football playoff, they may become that league that they think they are. But if the Sun Belt wants that number six spot, those are the games you really have to lock in on, and those are the games you really got to win.
Absolutely. Heading over to Monday, then, is the next one after that. Marshall playing UConn in the Myrtle Beach Bowl. UConn's a team that are they independent right now? Because they dropped out of the American, correct?
That is correct, yes.
I think for football, they are independent, and they're in the Big East in basketball. That has struggled at times, which is actually – I thought was kind of nice that they. I think it's been a while since they've been in a bowl game, so good for them. But do you know much about UConn? Obviously, you know about Marshall.
I do know for UConn, they were one of the two teams in the country that didn't play at all in 2020. Old Dominion was the other one. Remember, UMass was supposed to not play, but then they realized we don't want to fall behind too much because UMass is already a team that's really had struggles since moving up to the FBS. So they played their four games. Georgia Southern was one of those back in 2020, but UConn didn't play at all, which makes this rise back up with Jim Moore that much more impressive. And I think that they have found their niche. I think that this has been a really important season for them because this improves the trajectory, not just of that school. Their baseball's gotten better. Their softball's gotten better. We know what their basketball can do. That's their cash cow. But for football, to have that kind of success to get to a bowl game, I don't think it's going to go very well for them because I think Marshall's just way too strong up front. And now that they've got two healthy running backs and a quarterback that has improved remarkably the last month of the season, I would anticipate this one being a pretty easy victory for Marshall.
Is that Jim Moore that was formerly UCLA, formerly 49ers, and Jim Moore Jr.? Okay. I kind of wonder, you know, it's funny because I was thinking about him a couple of weeks ago. There was a UCLA score that popped up, and I was curious as to where he had been and what he'd been doing. So good for him. I think is a good football coach, maybe not a fit for UCLA. So good for him. Next one is Wednesday, December 21st. Western Kentucky and South Alabama in the New Orleans Bowl. This is a game that we talk about a lot, even so more so to me than the American Conference DOA after the words of Louisiana Tech's AD a couple years ago. This is one that I just want to – I want the Sun Belt. I don't care if it's even Georgia State. I want the Sun Belt just to crush their faces here.
Well, Georgia State's not going to a bowl. They're 4-8. But, yes, they did beat Georgia Southern, but whatever.
You're going to a bowl game, though.
Look, I think this is going to be the best game. Of any of the seven that are bowl eligible, I think this is going to be the best game because Western Kentucky has the number two passer in the country in Austin Reed. He went to the portal, and it was a, oh, what are we going to do kind of moment. But he took his name out. So he's fine. South Alabama's by far had their best season, 10-2. They've got two first-team all-league guys in their secondary, which matters a little bit more considering as much as Western is going to pass the ball. LaDainian Webb, first-team all-league guy at running back. I think that that's going to be a really good game.
Any surprise? The spread is, which we didn't go to. Let's go back to UConn real quick. Any surprise? To me, not so much with the way Marshall has played, like we talked about. Marshall's a 10-point favorite right now, but any surprise there?
No, that's – I was thinking two scores. I think Marshall's too strong up front. They've got too much at skill position, and I think that UConn might be fine if they can produce some kind of defensive touchdown. Maybe they're okay. I think Marshall's got too much.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm the only thing I'm a little surprised at is the over-under at 41. I'm going more scores there. I think Marshall's going to put some numbers up. So
I think part of the reason why it's low because of Marshall's defense.
I was going to say, can UConn score? So
maybe, but I think Marshall's offense is going to be able to do what they want to.
Okay. Now back to the Western Kentucky, South Alabama. The spread is Conference USA, South Alabama, 4.5-point favorite with a 56 over under. I think that's about right.
Yeah, I think that's pretty close. I'd still be inclined if we're talking in these terms, I'd be inclined to take the over. I know South Alabama's defense is really good too, but I also think that Western's offense is very similar to Georgia Southern's offense, and they're going to get their points, they're going to get their yards. It's just how it's built. But South Alabama's offense with Webb and then the ability to spread the ball to their receivers, that has the potential to be a high-scoring game for me.
One of the things there is that, and I want to ask about this before I forget about it, and not necessarily related to this game, but do you find that bowl games maybe are a little bit higher scoring because teams tend to open things up because even though it means something on the record, technically it's kind of an exhibition, you know? Everybody's taking it seriously, but I find that the Cajuns opened up some things that they hadn't shown in the sometimes.
Well, you can look at it in a couple of ways. One, you can say, well, teams have been hit hard by injury, the portal or whatever, because they're going to have to adjust their two deeps. And, for instance, we get to Georgia Southern and Buffalo. Buffalo's had at least 10 guys that have gone in the portal since the end of the season, so their two deep is probably going to look quite a bit different by the time we get to Montgomery. But also, yes, everybody wants to win their bowl game, but it is an exhibition, and it's a chance to try some things out. And if something doesn't work, it's not as if you're blowing a shot at a conference championship game. Everybody wants to end their season with a victory. Everybody wants the celebration. Everybody wants to hold up that trophy. But you have to have that little bit of risk taker in you to say, let's go for it. Because you don't want to wonder what if. Because that play that you take the risk on, that could win you a bowl game.
And that's what I was going to say. Part of it there is that you want the kids to have fun too. And they're going to have fun with in regards to doing something a little different, whether that's a flea flicker or something where you normally wouldn't throw the ball long, or you know, whatever it may be, or letting your defense just pin their ears back and go after the quarterback. You want your kids to have fun, you know, and it's not going to be any fun if they lose, but because they're all competitors.
I'll speak in Georgia Southern's case. The Eagles are practicing not having played by the time this game starts for a month. So, yeah, it's got to be fun enough to say, let's stick this out. Let's continue to get better. But you also have to have that element of, you know, we got to enjoy this a little bit. We earned the chance to have these 15 extra practices by winning in double overtime. In fact, just today at practice, I know this is in advance of Friday's games, but after Thursday's practice, Georgia Southern had four different offensive and defensive linemen try to catch punts. And if they did, there'd be no post-practice drills. And one of the reserve offensive linemen made a fantastic diving catch. I mean, I'm talking about the ball was on the very edge of his fingertips. You'd have to go to the monitor to see if the ball actually touched the ground. But dude's 280, made a great diving catch. Everybody went nuts. And that infuses that kind of energy and the fun that you're looking for after you've been doing this for months and months. I mean, you know you got a bowl, but at the same time, you got to enjoy what you're doing because not everybody in the country gets a chance to do this.
Well, let's talk in general here for a second before we get to our next two games that are coming up, because the next two games feature 2-6-6 teams on the Sun Belt Conference side with the Cajuns and Georgia Southern, the Eagles. But does it mean a little bit more for those two teams in general speaking, not as individual teams, but in general, does it mean a little bit more to get to 7-6? I mean, obviously it makes a winning record versus a losing record. Do you approach it differently, man?
I don't want to speak to the Cajuns because of the success they had in the final couple of years under Coach Napier, but for Georgia Southern a year ago at this time, you're in the offseason, you're 3-9, wondering what Coach Helton is going to look like. in 2022. And now you're 6-6, which, look, Georgia Southern standards isn't where they want to be. It's not where they would like to say every season is, but when you improve your win total by 3 at the absolute minimum with a chance to get to a winning record, to get to 7, to win a bowl, that's not just a box you're checking. To me, that's a big deal, because these guys, with one play in double overtime, extended their season by a month. Yes, you've got Christmas right in the middle of it, but for some of these seniors, whether you're in your 4th, 5th, or 6th year, that could have been it. But Ezra Archie catching that touchdown says that, okay, we get to do this for just a little bit longer. We get to lift weights. We get to do conditioning. We get to practice for one more month. And we get a chance to do this one more time with guys that are not just teammates, they're family members. And that's how guys really view it. And it's a celebration, regardless of how the game goes, for Georgia Southern and for Buffalo, because both had to fight like hell just to get to that point. Both needed to win their last game just to say that we are playing, we're eligible for a bowl game. I don't know if they thought they were going to be playing each other. And look, for the Cajuns, they knew that Georgia Southern was a game they probably had to win if they were going to be bowl eligible. They took care of that on that Thursday night. Yeah, they lost to Florida State, but they dominated Texas State, got to 6, and a chance to beat a Houston team, which has underperformed this year. But it's an AAC team, like we just talked about. That's a game where if you want to elevate this conference, it's neutral, it's a bowl, but that's a game you got to win.
Let's move on to that game. It's Friday, December 23rd, which I will say right now, self-promotion here and no guilt about it, that is my birthday. So the Cajuns can do a wonderful job of giving me a birthday present that afternoon. So 2 o'clock game kickoff. It's going to be 39 degrees or so around kickoff time. You know, two teams along the I-10 corridor, relatively the same below the I-10 level there. What do you see there? I mean, you spoke about Houston, but you probably know as much about them as I do. Hopefully more. That's why I got you on.
I just know that going into the year, they were a very trendy pick to be the G5 representative in the bowl, and good on Tulane for getting to the Cotton Bowl to play USC, which is ironic in a couple of ways, because I know as a Louisiana school, you're not terribly thrilled about that, but Georgia Southern's got connections on both sides of that with Willie Fritz coaching Tulane, and then that's the school that Clay Helton left to come to Statesboro. So yeah, we've got a little bit of a vested interest in that game. But for Houston, I think that they still got to a point where they could play in the postseason. I don't know that the Cajuns thought that they were going to be seeing them. And to know that they got the berth in one of the bowls that's not a tie-in, this was the secondary tie-in that didn't get announced all that long ago. But when the league had 7 eligible teams and the country didn't have enough eligible spots to fill all of the allotments, the Sun Belt benefits from this because technically you had the 5+1. Your 5 tie-ins, then Shreveport was going to act as the +1. But to know that all 7 got eligible spots for the first time ever, it's a big deal for the league. And for the Cajuns, I like the matchup because I think that they're going to be able to run the ball against Houston. And I think that that defense is going to have a chance to show out.
The wasn't Houston during one of the COVID years that after, like, when they first announced, or I shouldn't say first announced, but they when they said they're, you know, you could play in 4 games, several of their players, like their quarterback and maybe a couple of receivers,
yeah,
opted out in that season, and we're going to take a redshirt year and come back the next year.
Yeah, I remember specifically De'Ara King did it, their quarterback. He ends up transferring to Miami, and the awful thing that happened to him, he tore his ACL the next year. It was late in the season. But then I can speak to it a little bit more because Georgia Southern's Jeremy Singleton was a wide receiver on that Houston team that King opted out of after the first 4 games. But yeah, in 2018, when that rule came into place, it was, okay, it's probably geared more towards freshmen to get them that extra year of eligibility, but the hidden part of it is, well, if you're a veteran guy, junior, senior, you play 4, you can still preserve a year and maybe go somewhere else. Or if you think there's going to be a coaching change, if you've not got that kind of foresight, you can sit out and then play your extra year wherever you want to.
Well, I'm glad it hasn't become a trend on teams doing that or players doing that. But, you know, it's to your point of you never know what the future holds for you. Do you think, and I don't want you to, I'm just going to say this, and if you want to pontificate about it, you're welcome to, but I'm not going to, but Coastal Carolina a couple of years ago, I know what happened to their team, COVID, all that stuff, whatever, but you never know when's the next time you're going to be back in that championship game. And it probably could have been a very good game. And I don't know who would have won that game against the Cajuns and Coastal, you know?
Well, you're not knowing it 2 years before, but now you've got a 14-team league, and that makes getting to a championship game that much more difficult, considering how everybody was beating up on everybody else this year. And Troy and South Alabama probably were the two best teams in the league this year, but they shared the same division. Troy got the win head-to-head. Look, I thought that Coastal really battled, and I wasn't expecting them to be as good as they were, but they navigated their way through. They won the East, even though James Madison technically was in first place. Coastal wins the division because JMU's not eligible. And I've told you before, I thought Marshall should have won the division with what I saw on the field. I thought they had the most talent, and I thought if it would have clicked for them a little bit earlier, they would have won the East and they would be the representative. But the chances to play in a championship game and represent your division, they're going to become increasingly difficult with this current conference structure. We know who has been where they have been the last couple of years, but you could look up to Boone, North Carolina, as an example for App State. I mean, they had won 9 games every year for 7 straight years. For a transitioning team, that's unheard of. It's never happened before. They go 6-6 this year. Now, ordinarily, that would get you a bowl bid, but they played 2 FCS teams. So that's why they're home this bowl season for the first time since the move up. Can they get it back on track? Of course. But I would estimate that if they don't next year, then there's going to be a leadership change, and they're going to have to figure things out going forward. But if you're in this current iteration of the Sun Belt Conference, it is a serious shout as to if you slip 1 or 2 weeks, you might go to a bowl game, but that's going to cost you a chance to win a league championship, which is what everybody is out for whenever foot meets ball sometime in late August or early September every year.
Well, not only that, it means more now because you're having that, you have that opportunity to play in the college football playoffs. So
once that becomes official, and I think it's 24 that it's finally going to happen. So we've got to get to it, but to think that the Sun Belt now has a direct path to play for a national championship where before, maybe once every 20 years, maybe. Yeah. You'd have to truly catch lightning in a bottle. You'd have to go undefeated. You'd have to beat at least 2 Power 5 teams, kind of like what Western Michigan did in 2016 when they won their 2 and they got to the Cotton Bowl. But even so, you're not playing for a national championship. You just got to that Access Bowl. Now, when you've got a situation where those top 6 conference champions are going to get that bid, this is going to create even more conversation, and it's going to make those games mean that much more in this league, knowing that a slip could potentially cost you a shot at a national championship, where before that was at best a pipe dream.
And would it not have been true? I'm not sure if it was last year with the Cajuns, or a year or two before, that they would have gotten a bye as one of the, or with not a bye though, they would have been one of the top 6 FBS schools.
I think that was Coastal, because Coastal finished top 12.
Okay.
In that 2020 season. I think it was the Chanticleers.
Okay. Good enough. I thought it had happened, I should say. Speaking of Coastal.
But even so, that's proof that the Sun Belt is on its way, but when that actually happens, it's a matter of being able to let rubber meet road and let somebody represent this league on a national stage.
Absolutely. Speaking of Coastal, they're taking on East Carolina on Tuesday, the 27th, in the Ticket Smarter Birmingham Bowl. 2 teams from North and South Carolina having to go to Alabama to play. Cajuns did that a couple years ago in the Cure Bowl. Two teams from Louisiana matched up, Cajuns and Tulane. How do you see that game playing out there? Coastal's 9-3. My understanding is that I brain dead on the quarterback, but I'll let you speak about it in a second. But he's entered the portal, but is going to play in this bowl game?
Yes, that was the deceiving part of his whole announcement, that he was going to test the waters, but apparently he worked it out where he could play in this game. And it matters a little bit more so because of the news that came out a couple of days ago regarding Coastal's backup quarterback, Bryce Carpenter. He got arrested for a domestic incident, so he has been suspended indefinitely. So as of now, if Grayson McCall for some reason gets banged up or can't go, Jared Guest would be taking snaps. And look, he's played some garbage time, and he's played here and there, but to get meaningful snaps, that would be a different kind of ask. I don't think the McCall is 100%, but if Coastal is going to try to treat this as closing the curtain on the quote-unquote Chadwell era, he's already gone to Liberty, but for Chadwell to be out and McCall at least trying to give Coastal that bowl victory before Tim Beck officially takes over, I don't know how that they worked it out, because a lot of teams would say, if you're in the portal, we appreciate what you did, we will support you, but you are not a member of this school and this university anymore, so you can move on with your life however you see fit. But at least he gets a chance to play one more game for this league, and I say it because dude's been the player of the year 3 straight years, and nobody's ever done that before. So as much as people have animosity towards Coastal and they're not going to make a whole lot of friends across this league, Grayson McCall has more than held up his end of the bargain. He's the all-time Coastal record holder in passing touchdowns. He has meant a lot to this league, but it's clear that there is a changing of the guard in Conway.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means under Tim Beck, but it's clear that things are about to change in Conway.
I know for the Cajuns, and only speaking for the Cajuns on the football side, I don't know about the other sports. If once you submit your name to the portal and give that to your compliance officer and everything, your locker is cleaned out that day, and you are no longer a part of the team. Now you are a student and can finish, your scholarship is honored to the end of the semester, but once that part happens, you are no longer part of the team. So that, obviously they handle it a little different, and I'm not saying one way is right or one way is wrong. It's their choice, and good for him. You know, again, an American Conference team. It'll be one of the few times I'll be pulling for Coastal Carolina. But I do hope they win against East Carolina.
Can you say that sentence again?
I said, this will be the one of the few times I pull for Coastal Carolina.
Okay, I wanted to make sure I heard that, because a lot of things get lost sometimes from Central to Eastern. I just wanted to make sure that came through the way that thought I heard it.
We're so far apart sometimes when the transmission goes over the internet, it gets garbled. I know it does, and you hear the wrong thing. But yes, I said it twice. But at the same time, only because of this lead, I think, if we're going to be taken serious, and we said it all year long, we probably said it for the last 2 years, no matter what it is, what sport it is, we have to win these games. So that's just me right now. It could change tomorrow. So
you can look at these bowl matchups whichever way you want to, but there is a realistic chance that the Sun Belt could go 7-0.
I'm looking at it, and I don't think there is a game that I would say that's unwinnable, you know? So it's going to be fun to watch the bowl games. If you're a fan of the Sun Belt Conference, you're definitely going to have a good time watching bowl games. So our final bowl game of the night, we've talked about Georgia Southern several times. Obviously I think you're familiar with that team. So, a Buffalo team, 6-6, Georgia Southern team is 6-6. Tuesday the 27th, 11 a.m. And this is, these are all the times that I'm talking about are central. Obviously, we've got people that listen that are Georgia Southern fans and other fans of other schools that are on the East Coast. So I apologize for not pointing that out earlier. But Camellia Bowl, which is going to be played in Alabama, so it will be a central time zone game. So 11 a.m. on ESPN. And if you're on the East Coast, 12 p.m., which I know is hard for people to do the math on that sometimes. But how do you see that playing out?
Well, like I said earlier, this is a Georgia Southern team that needed to beat App to get here. This is a Buffalo team that needed to beat Akron to get here. The storyline is pretty thick right away with Kyle Van Treese having played his first 5 years with Buffalo, and now he ends his career against Buffalo. I think that somebody had a sense of humor when they're trying to figure out all these bowl matchups. Both teams are banged up. Both teams have been bit by the transfer portal. But I'm curious to see how that Georgia Southern offense does against a Buffalo defense that has forced a lot of turnovers this year. They forced 26 turnovers. That's fifth most in the country. They've got the nation's leader in interceptions. Marcus Fuqua has 7 picks. He had 2 in that finale against Akron. And they're 2 linebackers. They play a 4-2-5. Their 2 backers, James Patterson and Sean Dolak, are both over 100 tackles, so they are really important to that defense. And it seems that Buffalo's success has been predicated on the defense being steady, if not much better most of the year. Offensively, they've had trouble scoring points at times. And part of that is because, you know, the quarterback is now at Georgia Southern, but the guy that they have running the scheme now is Cole Snyder, transferred in from Rutgers, but he's a local guy from Western New York. He's second in the MAC in passing yards. At running back, they've had 2 of their top 3 guys hurt. And we don't know the status of the guys that are out, but Mike Washington started against Akron. He's somebody they use out of the backfield as well as a receiver. And then their wide receiving core, they've got 2 pretty solid guys in Marshall and Williams, but Jamari Gassett is another guy that's gone to the portal. He's their number 3 receiver, so he's not going to be playing in the game. They lost one of their tight ends. Trevor Borland went into the portal. Their starting center, Nick Haas, went into the portal. So how that depth chart is going to look, I guess we'll find out whenever they put the game notes out. But I feel like 2 teams that had to really battle just to get here, nobody's going to be mailing this in. Despite the losses on both sides for Georgia Southern, specifically the season-ending injuries in Buffalo, having about 10 guys at this point that aren't going to play because of the transfer portal, whoever's able-bodied is going to put forth the best effort that they can. And I think that this is going to be a compelling game because the storyline with Van Treese is good enough to be able to talk about it for a couple of hours. And we shall see who shows up because it is an earlier kick. It's 11 local, so we're going to be on at 9 a.m. with our pregame show, for instance. But whoever can take a sledgehammer to an alarm clock is probably going to be better off.
I noticed the game that they played against Akron was originally postponed. Do you know why? Was that weather?
It was the big snowstorm that went through Buffalo, and I think that was the same weekend that the Bills had to move their game to Detroit. And they ended up staying there because they were playing on Thanksgiving against Detroit. So they ended up spending, I think, about a week or so in Detroit for those 2 games.
Okay. Interesting. I hadn't realized that. I knew there were several teams for various reasons had to or played on what was Championship Saturday to get the bowl eligible. Those games were played. So good for them for getting that done.
Outside of Army-Navy on Saturday, that was the second latest regular season game just because they had to move it, and they played on that Friday right after. And it went off without a hitch, and Buffalo got the win that it needed to get to bowl eligibility. And we know Army-Navy is always going to be the last regular season game because it's a week later than everybody else. But that's why things work out the way that they do. And I just think it's funny that Kyle Van Treese takes his final college snaps against the team that he played for his first 5 years. So I'm sure there's going to be some shared knowledge on either side. And I'm curious to see how the gamesmanship works out between the two.
Absolutely. You're listening, and we're talking tonight, Craig Melanson on Danny Reed of the Georgia Southern Sports Network. Danny, good football year, I think, overall for the Sun Belt, and that's obvious with 7 bowl games. But basketball season is upon us. Got a lot of teams playing and a lot of good teams playing. What have you I don't want to go deep into basketball. We're going to be starting conference play here in the next couple weeks or so. But what are some of the things you've garnered from basketball so far in the Sun Belt?
Two teams that have bounced back after really tough seasons a year ago are Marshall and Southern Miss, and two teams we didn't really know much about because they weren't in the league. But Southern Miss, off to its best start in over 2 decades. I think they're 9-1, 10-1. They've just done really well, infused with some transfers. Jay Ladner has coached that team up really well. And for Marshall, a team that's going to play really fast, they struggled last year. They're off to a 9-2. I think they're either 8 or 9-2. They had a streak of, I think, 8 consecutive wins, all by double digits. So they've clearly been able to negotiate their non-conference. But also, I'll speak to the Cajuns. For a team that was preseason number one in the league, they're backing it up, 9-1, about to play McNeese, so possibly 10-1 against a team they should beat. And everybody is looking to have things clicking by the time conference play starts on the 29th of this month. And for some, it's going to be a split weekend. That's going to be a new concept, something we haven't really dealt with since that 2014 season, where sometimes you're playing one of those two at home and the other on the road. At least for Georgia Southern, the only time they do that is the first weekend. They've got South at Hanner. That's on the 29th, and then they go to Conway on the 31st. Outside of that, they are either home for two or away for two every other weekend. And you know you've got the prospect of the Sun Belt MAC Challenge that's going to start next year, so you want to try to improve your net ranking and just the overall profile of this league as much as you can going ahead. And I know the goal for Commissioner Keith Gill was to make sure that this league got two teams into the NCAA tournament. I don't know if it's going to happen this year. Granted, I don't think anybody really knows what's what at this point because nobody's played each other. But to give some schedule assistance for a group of teams that have trouble getting Division I home games, because you hate to look at a schedule and see all those non-D1 home opponents. You know you're going to take care of most of them unless you're Texas State and you lose to Mary Hardin Baylor. But for the most part, you're going to be able to take care of those non-D1 opponents. I don't know if you're really learning a whole lot about your team, but at least with this MAC arrangement, you're going to get a home game or a road game in November, and then a home game or a road game in February by the time that those NET rankings have a chance to roll out, and you're going to match up conceivably against somebody that's a like opponent in the MAC. But at least for this year, you can see the football kind of trajectory where you need to step forward. Football, it took about 5 years to do this. But I think that football is going to continue to rise, and I think football is ultimately going to become that next best Power 5 league. And I think we've talked about the idea before with the new arrangement of FBS football. Maybe you could look at the Sun Belt as a Power 5 school 10 years down the line if you want to use that nomenclature. But with basketball, this is the start of that progress where you're going up the escalator and you don't want it to stall because you need to see – at least 4 or 5 teams win 20 games. I think that would be a good start. At least catch the attention of the selection committee and make them think, well, one team won the conference tournament. That's all well and good, but maybe you need to see somebody else that could get in. I think it's been 9 years since the Sun Belt had two teams get into the NCAA, but who knows? If that expands to 96 in a couple of years like they're thinking about, maybe everybody will get in. Who knows?
Yeah, that's kind of scary at that point. Amy, you mentioned Southern Miss. To me, that was the biggest shocker. But anybody else on the upswing that everybody should look for?
Well, James Madison. I think that they're probably the deepest team in the league. And, you know, we know Mark Byington very well and his style of play. I think that they're going to be a very tough team to defend because they'll play a lot of guys. I think they could play up to 13 guys. I think everybody can score. They've got inside presence. They've got shooting. They'll play fast. On the flip side, though, I know you didn't ask this, but on the flip side, South Alabama has been a little bit underwhelming considering how well Richie Riley recruits and how much talent he brings in. Typically, their issue is they seem to have at least a couple of guys that have season-ending injuries, and you never know what they would have been. I think about 2 years ago, where they should have by far been the best team in the league with Michael Flowers, but that was his only year. Then he transfers to Washington State. But the thing about his teams, usually they're at their best by the end of February and the start of March, usually. So that could be something for the rest of the league to think about. But the idea that we've talked about a number of times is because we haven't matched up against each other as a league, a lot like football. I think we had an idea that everybody was decent, but until you see heads knock, you don't know what's what. And with basketball, because you have 18 conference games, I think that gives you a better feel for how deep the league really is as far as the postseason goes.
Do you see the league moving to 20 basketball games, 20 league games?
It would help teams that struggle with non-conference schedules because, I mean, for the instance of Marshall, I think part of the reason why they've had such a good season, they bought 5 home games because the finances are there where they could spend that athletic budget money to get 5 teams to come play them. Georgia Southern can't buy any games. That's why they need to be creative with their scheduling. They didn't play a Power 5 this year, but they did get 2 bye games out west against a Santa Clara team and a San Jose State team. They didn't win either of those. They played a 3-game multi-team event in Houston the next week. But for schools that have trouble struggling, or the schools that have trouble scheduling Division I opponents, especially at home, I think that a 20-game schedule would help. But that's something that everybody would have to agree on, and that's something that have to go to a vote before anything would actually happen. But I think that that's a good idea, and I think that's something that could happen down the road, because I think in 2015 we had a 20-game schedule, but I think that's been the only year we've had 20 league games.
Does that hurt you a little bit more, though, beating up on each other if a couple teams aren't dominant?
Depends on the league. Depends on how tough, how deep, and how balanced the rest of the league gets. Usually we've got a couple of teams that are better than everybody else, but if it's going to turn into what football has, then no. If you've got 14 schools that are playing basketball now, if 10 teams are beating up on each other, it may not look like it record-wise, but the collective strength is probably more than meets the eye.
Okay. All right, Danny, before we go, though, I've always asked you this, and I will continue. Any last words of wisdom, whether it becomes the bowl games or in reference to basketball this season?
There are a lot of people that will say that there are too many bowl games, but for schools in the group of five, especially this conference, that does not exist. These are teams that are getting a chance to play one more game, a chance to make a memory one more time. I'll go back to Georgia Southern's walk-off win against Eastern Michigan in 2018 at the Camellia Bowl. You don't get that if there aren't enough bowl games, enough chances for guys to play one more time, to give their schools exposure, to get 15 more practices, to improve the program. There are not too many bowl games. If you don't like bowl games, don't watch them. As far as conference basketball, this is the most intriguing season that I can remember, just because you've got the 4 new teams, and I'm going to ignore the preseason rankings because of all the change that has happened with so many of the top scorers in this league from a year ago that are no longer here. The first couple of weekends are going to give us an idea of what we have. And then once that passes, we're going to really have an understanding of how deep the league is once we get into February and March. I hope that everybody's not 500. I would like to think that there's going to be at least a couple of teams that rise to the top to improve the overall profile of the league. But you want to make sure that this is a league filled with teams where everybody is going to be competitive against everybody on a Thursday, a Saturday, or a Wednesday, or a Friday, or whatever the schedule is. But I'm excited for all of it, and I'm excited to see how football teams do in bowl season 2.
Absolutely. Danny, thank you as always for your time. I appreciate it, my friend. Merry Christmas to you and Daryl Lynn. I don't know that we'll speak in between the new year. It'll probably be after the new year, but we'll be in touch via text or a phone call here or there. But best of luck on your bowl game, my brother. I hope y'all go out there and dominate.
You guys too. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. And we will definitely do this soon.
Happy birthday.
And happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Thank you. I had to throw that out there because I needed a little love from people. You've been listening. We're talking. And we've been talking football, Sun Belt Conference football, Sun Belt Conference basketball as well with Danny Reed, voice of the Georgia Southern Eagles.
Any redistribution or reproduction of any part or all of the contents in any form is prohibited, except, who the hell are we kidding? Distribute it, share it, put it in your podcast, broadcast it, or put it on social media. Just give credit where credit's due.